For as long as I can remember, classic rock has been there for me. Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, The Beatles, The Stones, Dylan, Springsteen, Neil Young, The Who, Black Sabbath, AC/DC, David Bowie. The fixtures of my classic rock youth. But like all precious minerals, classic rock is a finite resource. One day it will disappear. Bands break up, albums go unplayed and are eventually forgotten. Legends die. But it still seems unfathomable. For much of my life, I thought that classic rock would be around forever. I remember when the reality of classic rock's mortality first dawned on me. It was 2012, and I was sitting inside of an arena on the outskirts of Chicago, waiting for The Who to come on stage. When I say The Who, I'm referring to half of The Who, Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey. The other two guys, Keith Moon and John Entwistle, were long dead. Moon died exactly 1 year after I was born, September 7th, 1978, from overdosing on pills prescribed to him to help stave off his craving for alcohol. This is the most ironic death in rock history. Entwistle passed away in 2002, 1 month before I saw The Who in concert for the first time. Entwistle's death was more typical for a rock star. He was found in a Las Vegas hotel room where he had been partying with a stripper named Allison. In life, Entwistle's nickname was The Quiet One, which I guess is ironic given his final moments. Before my first Who concert in 2002, I was bummed that I would never get to see The Who with Entwistle. I briefly considered not going. The purist in me wondered whether I was seeing the real Who. But what did I know about the real Who anyway? I started listening to classic rock as a teenager in the 90s, when many of my favorite bands had long since broken up, died, or devolved into tribute acts. But in my mind, the greatest rock bands the world has ever known were eternally frozen in their primes. To me, The Who was still the band on the cover of Who's Next. Sure enough, my reservations about seeing The Who without its original bassist and drummer disappeared approximately 1.2 seconds into the opening number, I Can't Explain. I was in awe of my heroes. Loving classic rock has always been an act of faith. Albums as sacred texts, live concerts as quasi-religious rituals, and rock mythology as a means of self-discovery. After discovering classic rock at the dawn of middle school, I committed myself to studying rock scripture. I read all of the books, subscribed to all of the magazines, and watched all of the documentaries. I sought out the most crucial LPs of the rock canon and played them over and over until the lyrics became my personal ethos. I loved the guitar riffs, the bombastic drums, the preening vocals. But what made classic rock an obsession for me was the belief that I was plugging into something profound and larger than life. I'm not a religious person, but if there is a God, I was sure I had found him on side two of Abbey Road. The mythology is what hooked me. Some kids read comic books, others glamorize athletes. My superheroes were rock stars who either had been deceased for decades or were well ensconced in the throes of middle age by the time I discovered them. But I didn't care. That just made my classic rock heroes all the more mythic. I worshipped Pete Townsend, Bob Dylan, Keith Richards, Jimmy Page, Jim Morrison, and Paul McCartney because they were distant, untouchable figures. They were like gods who I secretly believed could elevate my own humdrum existence if I had enough faith in the classic rock mythos. Of course, those people weren't gods at all, but rather mortals who would grow old, make comeback records with Don Was and or Jeff Lynne, and take money from beer companies for their overpriced, nostalgia-driven concert tours. For a while, I was able to overlook these realities and fixate on the myth. But that night in 2012, inside of the hockey arena outside of Chicago, my faith in classic rock couldn't completely blot out the truth.